The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, the Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this horribly named podcast. But the QA is the best part because that obviously stands for question and answer, as I like to make this an interactive conversation. We can talk out some of the top news stories that have been breaking over the last week. Maybe there's been some new news over the weekend, but we can sort out our feelings, come back together, and have a more engaged conversation about these top stories. It's why I like to hold my podcast on a Monday. Just give us some time to wrap our brain and wrap our brains around what's going on, and then gives us more of an opportunity to follow up on stories so we're not just constantly clicking the outrage porn button of breaking news headlines. We want to see what the follow-through on that reporting has been. There's already a crazy great crew in my live chat. I'm gonna be drinking a lot of water because I've been shooting videos like crazy and my voice is already failing on me. But I'm seeing Sam across the pond, cast of Sam and Matt Tyler, Gary the Fireman, Q3 Becker, a Warhead 324, Aditya Anil. We've got Andy. We've got Gabaletta. We've got Vazikos, ER 1980. Dave Burns, Tech Loving Mama. This is a good crew. We're going to have a fun conversation. Well, maybe not with Matt because his battery is currently at 3%. So everyone feel bad for Matt. and Gary has already jumped in with a tier one sub to Andy. Much appreciated, Gary, as always, supporting production on this channel, supporting the show. Just to start things off, as always, I hope you had a lovely weekend. It was really hot, but me and the fam, we kind of walked around the neighborhood. We did a nature hike, you know, out in this little creek that's out there in the back. And Lex had a really good time just kind of playing around and doing some fun stuff there. And Gary the Fireman with another. He's currently at 73 gift subs. Gary is a big old sweetheart, and I absolutely appreciate all of that support. That I'm going to try not to get too distracted by gift subs, but I'm also trying something a little bit fresh. As you know, I have some philosophical issues with putting all of my production eggs in a And Gary with another tier one sub for Igor Carvalho. It's at 74. Can he get to 75 by the end of this stream? Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it. I'm trying something just a little fresh. As you know, I stream this on Twitch. You know, we'll call this the beginning of housekeeping. What is it, 9:05? Housekeeping is going to run just a little long because I've been doing a lot. But one of the things that we need to cover in housekeeping is one, trying to figure out Twitch stuff. So I'm real bad at doing the Twitch. I stream a very straightforward, on the rails kind of podcast. I don't like putting all of my production eggs in one basket, namely YouTube. And I've got some issues with the way that YouTube has been doing business with content creators. So I'm trying to spread things out a little bit more and make content for appropriate platforms. And it was brought to my attention that something I thought I had been doing, I had not set up properly at all. So there's this thing called channel points. The more you watch a channel, you know, you accrue these points, and then you can kind of spend those points in the chat. And so I put a few things to do down in the channel points, like you can tell me to check my posture or stand up and stretch or come up with some other activities or send me a message that's actually labeled and color coded. So if you're watching this live, if you're watching this on the Twitch, you can hit the little channel points icon in the bottom left of the, and Sam is already telling me to hydrate and to check my posture. Well, I've got my lumbar pillow on this silly gaming chair here, but I am going to hydrate. Starting off this show with the delicious mega pickle mug. Now, I'm not going to, this is just, everyone's telling me to hydrate. I will be hydrating as necessary. Matt Tyler redeemed stretch. Do a full, like, over. So I'm thinking one of the things I might add is also, like, at like 10,000 channel points, you can make me do a set of push-ups or something like that. We'll have to see. My hat is leaning left. It's going to be great. So, Aditya Nil, Juan is going to be some needing to go to the bathroom guy by the end of this. Dave Burns, 20 push-ups it is. and I'm not going to be adding dancing. Maybe I should. You know, why not? It's Twitch, and apparently that's a thing that you do on the Twitches, is some dancing stuff. But I'm not going to do the floss. I'm not going to be flossing. Maybe I'll dig up some of my old step routines from college, back when I was a hardcore stepper with the Black Student Union. It's pretty great. So, for Tech Love and Mama, I'm going to do some hand stretches. Kind of pull against my wrist here. It's going to be great. We have 30,000 points. We're going to make you some physically fit guy. See, that's the thing, is if you've been watching this channel, you should have channel points stored up, because I thought I had turned on like the basics and none of that had been activated. It's because I'm real bad. I'm real bad at the Twitch. So, all right, let's jump into some proper housekeeping, just what's been going on the channel. All of the stories that we're going to be talking about, all of the housekeeping, everything that you're going to see on this week's show can be found on the show notes, somegadgetguy.com. I'm a little off my normal schedule just because now I'm trying to keep an eye out for those channel redeeming points things. I mean, I think this is going to be fun, but Matt, don't be too serious with the banhammer today. I'm just going to be distracted and kind of silly, but I appreciate Matt's one of our mods and he's looking out for people getting a little too goofy, but people got points to spend and I messed this up. So apparently this is my penance for not doing Twitch correctly. No, I appreciate what you're trying to put down there, though. And again, yeah, everyone say, hey, Matt the mod. And he's definitely been a big help just for when we've had a few issues on this stream. All right, housekeeping. And we're going to go real fast. Let me get this right here. Last week, we kicked off the week with my Xperia 5 top 5 video. That was a weird embargo time, but I'm just kind of bringing it back up because you know, I've been kind of surprised. Me and TK talked about our Xperia videos. And it's been interesting seeing what videos are getting traffic. But if you want sort of a first look at the Xperia 5 Mark II, that video was published right before last week's podcast. I also wanted to have just a bit more of an engaged conversation with people that are looking at different or alternative devices. And I'm considering making this a more regular series of videos with different phones coming out. So this is Surface Duo, what you need to know. I really hate the clickbaity. I really don't want to do clickbaity, but it's apparently the only thing that works on YouTube as my channel metrics plummet for like the third month in a row of social distancing. But I wanted to have a slightly different conversation about the Duo. So this video really is primed at people who are thinking about buying a Duo. I'm focusing the discussion, pros, cons, some of my experiences to that audience, less trying to convince you that it should be worth it to exist, how Microsoft is making compromises. If you're not thinking of buying a Duo, you can still watch this video, but it's not really for you. And I'm not trying to make it an argument for justifying the existence of a product more, what it's been like actually using it. Then this has been the video that has been doing pretty well on the channel. Xperia 5 Mark II versus Xperia 1 Mark II, the Sony showdown. This is all of the little differences as I see it, what differentiates an Xperia 5 from an Xperia 1. And I'm telling you, if you've been watching my podcast or listening to my podcast, you know that I think it's a tragic mistake to sleep on Sony. Sony from last year to this year, beautiful refinement, a really savvy focus on some of Sony's core strategies like gaming and photography, and it's exemplified on the X5 II and the X1 II. I don't like calling them that. The Xperia 5 Mark II, the 1 Mark II. These phones are gorgeous, and they offer up a unique experience that I'm really glad to see. It's definitely the Sony style, not can we make a phone more like a Samsung but cheaper. Then I really enjoyed taking a second listen through the One More True Wireless Active Noise Canceling earbuds. They're using a new technology called QuietMax, and this has enabled them to get a THX certification, and it's kind of a big deal. I believe these are the first true wireless earbuds to get this certification, and it's twofold. It's one, that this is they are high quality audio representation, but that their ANC is extremely low distortion and low altering of the sound profile, which is why THX is starting to look at these new consumer earbuds. So I just took a second listen through. I'll be honest, I think I had a really hard time detecting any specific differences. Like, I had the first gen, I listened to the second gen, I kind of did a little A-B. If you had the first generation true wireless ANC, I think you're still doing fine. It's just shocking how brutal the One More noise canceling is. I still don't think I found anything. It's a disconcerting level of noise reduction. And then lastly, wrapping us up, a video with a minor controversy. Get iOS 14 widgets on Android. So I'm really happy to see that the editorials on iOS 14 have kind of calmed down a little bit. We're going to be talking about iOS 14 here in just a bit. But you know, one of the major announcements was getting widgets. And I feel like there was that immediate knee-jerk reaction where people who fought me over the last 2 years about changing iOS then suddenly had to about face. So with iOS 12, I've been saying for a while now, iOS is messy. We need better customization. We need better organization for apps and folders and stuff like that. And I had a bunch of, you know, Apple fans telling me I'm wrong and everyone uses it and it just works. And this is the way Apple does it. And the way Apple does something is always the best way. And then Apple comes out with iOS 14 and kind of validates everything that I've been saying about how we should be cleaning up our phones and using them more efficiently in an era where we're installing more services than ever before. And now it's the about face of, well, now that Apple's done widgets, this is the best way to do widgets. And I feel like that kind of misses the point. So I'm really glad that that initial burst of editorials, iOS 14 widgets, blow Android away, now that we've gotten through that in, you know, that immediate knee-jerk reaction to iOS 14, and people have been using it for a while, and there's some pros and there's some cons. I kind of felt like it was worth just looking back on Android to see some of the customization options that we really have, because I don't believe customization means just getting some bigger app shortcuts. It means being able to make your phone do anything that you might want it to do, with varying degrees of difficulty. I mean, there are some Android home screen options that are even a little out of my league. But if you want to make your phone a unique, custom, tailored fit experience for you, Android can do that. So while this is, again, the clickbaity of iOS 14, widgets, and Android, that's like our SEO right there, right? This video will do better just because I've mentioned iOS 14 widgets and the combative inclusion of the word Android in the same title. I hate that I have to play this game. I hate that this is what YouTube is making me do. But if you watch the video, yes, there is an explanation as to how you can get sort of the look and feel of iOS widgets. But really more, it's to kind of talk about how far you can push Android. And I even show, like, when I tech detox, I have a very specific home screen, single screen, ultra simple, no information, and it's all text widgets. You know, like, I'll just say text, call, web, email, and those are just words on my screen, and I hit the word and I get the thing that I want. So I'm trying to illustrate an idea that I feel people have been sleeping on customization for too long for this out-of-the-box, consumers should never have to do anything but turn it on, and then it should automatically just work and be the thing that you want it to be. I'm done with that. I kind of want us to get back to making our gadgets the perfect fit for each individual consumer. And, you know, if you're interested in customizing widgets, that might be one way to do it. So there was a lot. I do want to tease later this afternoon, a pair of videos will be going live. One on my channel and one on TK Bay's channel. So I really hope that you're following both of our YouTube channels, because we're kicking off another phone challenge. This is Phone Challenge 3. Our first phone challenge was a photography and camera challenge between an LG G7 and a Huawei P20. I'd have to look that back up. I should have that memorized. Our second challenge was the cheap phone challenge, where I got TK a phone so cheap that he ripped the back glass off while he was trying to peel off the plastic shipping protector. But this year, we're doing something just a little bit broader. If you're on the Patreon, it's already in preview, so you can see TK and Juan phone swap challenge number 3, and this video is titled The Exchange. But we're going to be doing a harder core look at high-end productivity. So TK's video is going to be explaining that in greater detail. My video is goofy and corny and kind of dopey and just for fun. So you can catch both of our videos going up later this afternoon. All right. That's housekeeping. Well, I technically started housekeeping at 9:05. And now it is 9:19. So housekeeping was technically a 15-minute endeavor. think I need to make that one of the channel points, is do ASMR hydrate. So there's regular hydrate and ASMR hydrate. Because I know I hate when I hear that kind of stuff in my podcasts, and it just kind of cracks me up when I get to do it to other people. Dave Burns, ew. All right. Why don't we get into some news? Let's chew through this news block, because we've got some tech to talk about, some announcements that I'm really excited about, some products that I think are a little interesting. And then I've been using a couple things that I still haven't been able to get videos out on. Excuse me. And I might need to just start making a review block in the podcast, so I can talk about something and have it go out and maybe cut up a piece of that video, and it's not a standalone produced video. I have been putting out a video almost every day for, I think, the last 3 weeks, almost 4 weeks, and the YouTube algorithm does not like that. The YouTube algorithm is very annoyed by a total mashup of audio gear, accessories, PC hardware, gaming gear, camera tech, audio tech, and then phone reviews. They do not know what to do with me. And like I said, for putting out as many videos as I have, my channel metrics have never been lower. So I'm kind of game to continue. Like, there's a part of me that really wants to see how anti-algorithm I can make all this. So, yes, short story, incredibly long. We're going to move on to the news block, and let's get some of this out of the way. Some good, some bad. We've got to start with the politics. We talked last week briefly. I put up a link in last week's podcast just talking about our attorney general starting to look at the social media protections. I really feel if you're a techie, if you're into technology, then you need to be aware of the Communications Decency Act, specifically Section 230. That is the collection of protections for online media that allows most of the internet to function. It's in a nutshell, that's what allows a Google, a Facebook, a YouTube to act as a platform and to claim they are not a publisher. So they are not responsible for the content that users submit to that platform. Well, in a modern era of social media kind of unraveling all of society, and where I'm with Denk Pikmin God was here, I don't trust our current administration in the United States. We need a very nuanced touch for revising these kinds of protections. I feel there's a regulatory action that's necessary. I feel like a Facebook gets to have it both ways. They are totally not a publisher, but they have absolute editorial control over what can be on their platform, and they manipulate the order of your feed to keep you on the site longer. So we're going to be having another round of Senate testimony. Facebook and Twitter CEOs to attend hearing about Section 230 protections, and it seems like Google's Sundar Pichai will be testifying as well. Now, this article is coming by way of Mariella Moon on Engadget. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey have agreed to testify before the Senate Commerce Committee to discuss Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. Their confirmation comes a day after the committee unanimously voted to subpoena their companies, along with Google, to compel them to attend the hearing. While Google has yet to issue a confirmation, a source told Reuters that Alphabet CEO Sundar Pichai will be testifying as well. So we got to keep a lookout for this. The conversation that surrounds Section 230 is extremely contentious. I feel like the main talking points coming out of conservative politicians is how Google is biased against conservatives and is censoring speech, where the conversations coming out of more liberal politicians is I think a bit more multifaceted. There are some people that are concerned about sort of squashing speech, but then there are more people that seem to be concerned about monopolistic business practices, anti-consumer behavior, And then sort of the health of our discourse for political topics as we sort of stumble our way into this next election cycle. So the executives will be testifying virtually. They're not going to be in person, and I wouldn't blame them given the outbreak of situation illness that is currently hitting our elected officials. But we're looking at October 28th. So putting this article up there now, you can click the link. There's a great breakdown, and Gadget has a great write-up on this. But I mean, I might even try and do another live stream. We did one for the last time. All of these CEOs were up for sort of antitrust, a Senate judiciary subcommittee. It's an interesting look. It's a peek into how our government functions, and it's going to have huge ramifications for sort of the future of discourse and how the entire internet works. So that's just so you know, Section 230. Read up on it. It's another opportunity for me to plug Legal Eagle. The Legal Eagle YouTube channel has a phenomenal video that breaks down, you know, how protected speech works and how these platforms operate and what the Communications Decency Act provides and how companies have been trying to like kind of game the political and the legal side of these protections. I love his channel in general, but it's if you care about technology and using these services, then it's absolutely something you should check out. And maybe I should just make that like one of the permalinks, because I reference it so many times whenever we talk about politics. Yeah, and Steve Q3 Becker, 6 hour live streams are sick. So they started late, and so I was on stream at the right start time. I was there. I don't see why there should have been any issues for the CEOs of these companies to also be on time for a Senate Judiciary Committee. And then they started an hour late. I was on stream just kind of chatting with folks for that hour, and then they went like 4.5 hours. And they kept voting in, well, I'd like an additional round of questioning for these CEOs. And I'm like smashing my face into the keyboard like, this is the worst ever. Trey 916 sounds like legal. It's the Little Caesars of lawyers. He is way better than the Little Caesars of lawyers. You watch your mouth when you speak of legal DJ. If I were going to man crush on any lawyer, it would be legal. Because he's so well put together and spoken and funny. He's funny, and that's what I like. He's like, he digs into the law. He also does like movie reviews, like breaking down courtroom scenes in your favorite movies. I found him by looking up My Cousin Vinny, and he has a kind of a breakdown on the legal proceedings in My Cousin Vinny, and it's great, and he's really good. All right, moving right along. I just thought this was an interesting story because it's something that I hope retailers will start to change their behavior on, but I think it's going to be a significant consumer retraining in a very small way. So we talk about e-waste and we talk about the environment, and the truth of the matter is, I mean, people rush to mention this kind of stuff. The truth of the matter is, if we're really going to try and combat waste and improve the environment, major industrial sources need to be a primary focus. So when we put the onus on consumers to like, you stop drinking bottled water and recycle your gadgets, you know, we know rationally that the big damage is being done at like the corporation level. But that doesn't mean Matt Tyler's telling me to hydrate. Thanks, Matt. But we know that if we can make some small adjustments to our own behavior and clean up our own act, that will contribute to what's going on too. I feel like there's a cop-out, right? Well, if we can't change the policy of massive corporations, then why should I change my own behavior? It's not going to do much. But we're at a crisis point where I feel any little bit is going to be a help. So when I see a story like this coming out of IKEA, IKEA to remove non-rechargeable alkaline batteries by 2021. This is coming directly from the newsroom at IKEA. I don't know. Do they have someone who wrote it up? No, they don't. Following IKEA's commitment to inspire and enable people to live a healthier and more sustainable life at home, all non-rechargeable alkaline batteries will be removed from the global home furnishings range by October of 2021. With this decision, IKEA wishes to inspire consumers who need to frequently use batteries to make a switch to rechargeable batteries. Regular use over time enables consumers to both save money and reduce waste at home. So this is going to be, I feel like, a consumer re-education. There are so many times where you just buy batteries, pop them into something. When you're done, you throw them away. And I mean, we want to stop doing that. We want to start changing our behavior. So I'm really excited to see IKEA making this move. They're just not going to sell regular single-use disposable batteries. I just feel like people who I mean, because you kind of forget, like I buy batteries at Costco and, you know, you get the big old thing, but you know, IKEA is the same. You forget that that's a thing. People just buy like batteries in bulk. And I worry that what they're going to do is just keep buying batteries and they'll burn out faster because they're rechargeable. And then they'll just throw those away and then go buy more rechargeable batteries and throw those away. And so that's what I mean. It's like there needs to also be some sort of component where we're illustrating the, buy a charger, get these rechargeable batteries, and then, yeah, you might have to swap them out more frequently, but you're not buying more batteries. And I feel like we're in the right time to start having some of those conversations and start changing some of our consumer behavior. I just worry that the transition will probably be just as wasteful until it starts to pick up a more fashionable, you know, a better mind share of that kind of behavior. Tray 916 Eneloop FTW. I've got some Eneloops. The Energizers were not good. I've got a really nice, I can't remember who made it. I've got a really nice battery charger. But I found like the Energizers, even when I would slow charge them, like I would put the batteries in overnight at the lowest possible charge rate just to keep them from running hot. And after a couple recharge cycles, like capacity would just plummet, how long they would work for. I had to give up using rechargeables in, I had to give up using the Energizers, excuse me, in my outboard sound recording gear. So I'd have like a handy recorder that was battery powered, and I'd have like lavalier mics, like those Sennheiser Evos. You kind of need the current, the sort of consistent current that would be in double A's. Those Energizers just nuked, just evaporated as soon as you would fire up transmitters. So yeah, the Eneloops, good times. I was a big fan of the Eneloops. I'm going to be curious. I've never tried the IKEA batteries. I feel like that might be worthy of a run test just to see, you know, like Eneloop versus IKEA rechargeable. But, you know, this is a quick timeline. I don't like that their headline is saying they're getting rid of non-rechargeable batteries by 2021, because that makes it sound like by December that they'll be getting rid of them. But in 1 year, from this October to next October, if they can really clear out and shift their accessory strategy to using rechargeables, that's kind of exciting. JMX Warrior, IKEA batteries are better than Duracell. Shots fired. Dag, yo. Dag. And thanks, Al Zombino. I'm telling you, folks, I've been shooting so many videos, my voice is not going to hold up. I'm going to get real fuzzy by the end of this. Maybe I should talk a little bit quieter and try and do more of the ASMR voice. I don't know that would be any better. Moving right along, we've got some fun news for computers. Computers. sorry, Trey 916, but you can't top the copper top. Oh, Samsung and Aditya Anil saying Samsung batteries are better than LG batteries. Oh, no. Oh, no. No, I want to talk about computers. So we know Apple is shifting their Mac strategy to use their own custom chips, Apple Silicon. But, you know, they're doing this in a more reserved way, a more developer-focused way, kind of a private setup, you know, what Apple Silicon ARM instruction sets are going to be like for MacBooks. I'm sure they're going to be fine. But if we're talking about the PC space, Windows on ARM has been a much more public sort of beta test of pros and cons and shaky performance, and getting Qualcomm on board with some beefier processors to run laptops on. I still believe that AMD and Intel are going to get rocked in the consumer space by low power ARM chipsets for consumer gear. I'm using phones now that can handily outpace cheaper consumer laptops and up to like $1,000 price point. So your $1,000 phone can significantly outperform your $1,000 laptop for some real heavy lifting. So when we're talking about this transition, and we're talking about consumer products that are going to get better battery life and can probably have an easier time bolting on radios and modems and 5G and all that fun stuff, I like seeing more progress on app support. So this is written up by Chris Holt on Engadget. Windows 10 for ARM will support 64-bit. Oh, whoops. I was trying to copy the link. Will support 64-bit x64 apps through emulation. From the article, there still aren't too many Windows 10 PCs or laptops on the market with ARM-based processors, but folks who do have those machines will soon be able to run 64-bit x64 apps on them. Microsoft says it will at last roll out x64 emulation to Windows Insider testers in November. So Windows 10 has been able to emulate 32-bit x86 apps on ARM for a while, along with native 32-bit and 64-bit apps. So this is just new support. You know, I kind of forgot that, you know, people would still have to make that that installation decision. 32-bit software versus 64-bit software, blah, blah, blah. This is just another baby step towards trying to bridge some of those issues that we've been having since Windows 8. Now, Microsoft has been trying to make a more streamlined and mobile-focused OS since the RT days, you know, where you could have a lower-power tablet, not have all of the back-end back-end support for legacy applications. It was just going to be, this is our spot moving forward. But in Windows land, we can't escape that kind of compatibility. You have a PC and you want to run older software. It just seems to go hand in hand, peanut butter jelly time. Apple still only represents 9%, 10% of the PC market. If we look at desktops and laptops, something like that, all combined, someone please correct my numbers. I'm probably wrong. So if they decide to just pull the plug on, you know, older versions of Mac OS, all right, that's what you do. You're Apple. You can do that. Windows has no such luxury. They need to maintain ridiculous backwards compatibility. So if ARM emulation is reasonably effective, it can deliver decent performance, then that makes Windows on ARM a much more attractive buy. And it should also help. I mean, once you have Windows on ARM and you start encouraging a few more app developers to support a growing ecosystem of ARM-powered devices, I'm telling you, the price performance ratio that you can pick up on phones is kind of insane. And I think Apple has a good idea in rolling their own chips, in rolling their own processors. If you can focus and optimize and improve that hardware-software synergy, then this all gets a lot better. And it also gets a bit cheaper, depending on how you go about it. Aw, oh, dang Pikmin God. You know, sad Windows phone sounds. Oh, Trey916, I want to see that Apple Silicon whisper you did jump cut into every video you do talking about Apple Silicon. I mean, again, I forgot to say Apple Silicon trademark, copyright, registered Apple 2020. Apple Silicon. because it's just, it's an ARM instruction set processor. They make custom processors. They're ARM-based. They're great. They're very powerful. They are very good processors. This brand new Apple Silicon, it's just silly. They really gotta make it feel like they're inventing something. This isn't Silicon. It's Apple Silicon. I'm Gary the Fireman. 75 gift subs. I'm going to take a congratulatory finishing of the water that's in this coffee mug.
Hey, folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Dave Burns, because supporting 16-bit software from 1990 is breaking Windows' ability to grow. Agreed. That is accurate. We get to a point where if we can improve emulation, though, you want to run Command and Conquer, like the OG Command and Conquer, then being able to emulate is going to be more effective and better in the long run than trying to maintain an operating system that really can go back and support all that stuff. ER1980, also rumor circulating that they will only have one major update for Windows 10 in spring and one major update for Windows 10 on ARM in fall. I'd actually be okay with that. I feel like the most recent Windows updates fix a bunch of problems and then create new problems. And it's been kind of a frustrating dance back and forth. Like, I actually reset my workstation and went back to 1903. So that's two major Windows feature versions back. And now it kind of re-updated me to 1909. And I think I'm going to stick here rather than going back onto 2004. I'd really like for them to start honing in on the stability and the issues of Windows. Like, I'd be fine for an entire year of no feature drops, but refine, 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 refine. It's one of the things I kind of like about Android 11. It doesn't feel like a radical new operating system. It feels like a Pixel feature drop. It feels like we're going to focus in and improve some of these quality of life issues rather than try and impress you with the wowzers of all these new UI elements and stuff. So moving forward, I feel like that's probably better. And Nick Fell, using emulation for backwards compatibility is great because you can brute force it with modern processing power. I remember when I first started messing with like emulators, and they were sort of tied to clock speeds. And so not knowing what I was doing, and you try and fire up like Atari games, and they were unplayable because they were playing at 800 megahertz. Like, oh, this is hilarious. I love this. I am old. Okay, moving right along. Speaking of the issues that come from updating software and trying to add new features and improve compatibility, I take no joy in this, but I kind of feel like we should be bringing up these topics. Hold on one second. I'm going to move on to coffee mug number two. This coffee mug is the best way to stay connected to your beverage because it has a glorious analog connector. And so when you're drinking something delicious, like really cold filtered water, you want to have the best signal stability. You want to have the best connection to that beverage. So this is a little hashtag merch plug with Dave Burns giving me the hydrate. Let's do it. Yeah, I'm going to have to add like a 10,000 point ASMR hydrate. I think I'm going to have to make that play. All right.
Matt Tyler, 146 gift subs between Matt and Gary. I cannot thank you guys enough. That is huge. I really appreciate the support. Now, back to the story. I'm happy to say that I'm not getting hit too hard here, but I just picked up my iPhone SE, and I swear this was almost completely fully charged yesterday, and it doesn't have a SIM card in it, so it's only connected over Wi-Fi, and I just got the 1% battery warning, so now I've got to plug this thing in. So, if you're on, let me get back to my browser, iOS 14, the most recent patch update, iOS 14.0.1, does not seem to have fixed some of the issues with this operating system release. So this is written up by ZDNet, Adrian Kingsley Hughes. Just looking at some of the things that have recently been fixed in iOS 14.0.1, reboot setting defaults back to Apple apps, camera previews not displaying on iPhone 7 and 7 Plus, Wi-Fi connectivity issues, mail issues with some providers, and the news widget issues. But what doesn't seem to have been fixed is this insane battery drain, which we're looking for, hopefully 14.0.2 is going to fix. At present, it seems that the only major fix for this battery drain on iOS 14 is to completely wipe out your device and set it up from scratch. I've been searching through. I haven't seen anyone else find, like, well, maybe there's a network connectivity setting, or maybe there's like a battery drain setting. Doesn't seem like anything else works. Now, I had, to bring this up, the V60's first major update on my LG, you know, this is my V60, this is my dual screen bay. I need to get a new sticker for it because Lex likes to decorate this case. She thinks it's too plain, but then the stickers peel off. So we need to get a better decal that'll actually stay on there. It's like surfboard of a smartphone. The first major update wrecked the battery life. And that's one of the major selling points of the V60 is its battery for days. Like, it's a 2-day phone under my use. It's a 2-day, not 2-day and 2-night, but 2-day phone, no charging. So that was very disappointing. I was like freaking out. Like, one of the main things I'm recommending about the V60 is this awesome battery life. And the first update from LG nuked it. And of course that contributed, right? That contributed to a bunch of LG can't do software and oh, updates and this and that. So I had to nuke the phone and set it up from scratch. And then that fixed the battery life. There's an expectation that Apple software is going to be so much more bulletproof and it just works, and all of that branding and marketing. So this isn't to pick on Apple, it's to pick on PR. It's to pick on the expectations that marketing gives us, but no computer is a finished product anymore. Not a single one. It doesn't matter what logo is on the back. It doesn't matter what you like or what team's jersey you put on when you make a smartphone purchasing decision. Computers are fluid and they're moving targets, and we expect that they'll be supported and updated and improved over time. You know, iOS 14 is kind of emblematic of that. There's a lot of changes. There's a lot going on. I fear Apple bit off a little bit more than they could properly chew, and we arrive at a pretty poor user experience for a lot of consumers out there, which is not usually the conversation we have with Apple, right? We get the new shiny and we're rushing out there to say, oh, Apple, and it just works. And oh, it's so great. This is going to be the best smartphone ever. Living with it, really using it, digging into it. These are the kinds of concerns we should be addressing when we have these longer term conversations. Is there every expectation that Apple's going to fix this? Of course. Of course. This is not to deter a purchasing decision, but it's to make consumers aware and to keep them abreast of what's going on. But I also feel if you're trashing one company because they're less SEO popular and you're praising another company for the good software when they're in the middle of a battery nuking event, maybe your commentary is a little lopsided and maybe it's being influenced by your ad revenue more than an honest assessment of what's going on in the technology landscape. Coming from ER1980, I'm using iOS 14.0.1 and the battery drain is true. Apple is stating a factory reset is the solution until they release a software update. So I might just need to nuke my my iPhone SE. Because, I mean, like, again, I swear I had this fully charged. Actually, while I'm on stream, I'm going to get my lightning cable. And let's get this recharging again. That makes me even more critically nervous on phones like the SE. This phone already has a super tiny battery. So when I see that after charging it yesterday, that makes me really not happy. Because these are additional charge cycles that this battery really shouldn't be put under. Having the awesome power of the A13 Bionic on one of the smallest batteries of the year, and then having software which melts that battery down, makes me a little cranky. I'm a little not super great with that. from McCorkorin 3. It's amazing how forgiving YouTube can be at times. It's always the like, for example, I put iOS widgets in a video title, immediately does better than like five of the last six videos that I put out on my channel. I mean, it's not great. So from Loud Cobra 1, you keep buying them. I am a tech reviewer. I am a tech reviewer who also kind of acts like a smartphone historian, where someday I'll actually take us through a tour of the bookshelf, which is about half of my collection of portable electronics. And it's shocking and scary what kind of fire hazard that probably is. I kind of feel, you know, Apple gets singular coverage because Apple, because they are a monolithic company with a closed off ecosystem. We've got to still address the concerns of that audience. I mean, again, I feel pretty well validated. I've been talking about iOS UI design for a couple years, and iOS 14 addresses some of the major concerns that I've had. If we can't fairly criticize or critique what's going on iOS, then an entire group of smartphone consumers are going to be left out in the cold. I mean, their products don't get better unless we bring up the pros and cons in sort of an honest forum, not just sit there and pat ourselves on the back for being on team popular and everything's always great and my phone never lags and it just works. If we only let tech influencers mimic Apple marketing slides, then our gadgets suck. So I don't want an Apple that's less competitive. I want an Apple that's going to drive Android manufacturers to improve their products, because then my gear gets better. I just wish we were in those glory heydays where every iPhone announcement came with a feature that I just desperately wanted on my Android. And I don't think we've had that Apple for a little while. Mr. Bobman 15, if you want to use a smaller phone, why aren't you using the Sony Xperia Mark V as your main phone? Every review I've read on it says it's one of the most comfortable phones they've ever used. If you're addressing me with that, it's because I've already had to send the Xperia 5 to Mark II back to Sony. I only had it as a short-term loaner, and it's not officially available for sale here in North America just yet, but I've got videos on it if you want to watch it. The main problem is I put out a video on iOS widgets, and the viewership on that is way higher because of YouTube. I put out a video on the Xperia 5 Mark II, and no one gets to see it, and no one's sharing it. So if you want to see more content on that, we need the shares. Big time, we need more shares. If we don't have the audience engaged and forcing the algorithm to acknowledge that other companies exist, then we go away, or we only talk about Samsung and Apple. And that's the gig. McCorkorin, why would anyone buy X when you can get Y or Z?
Hmm.
from ER1980. iOS 11 was buggy as hell, and iOS 12 solved that. Then iOS 13 was buggy, but not as much as iOS 11, and now iOS 14 looking to solve that, just like iOS 12 did with iOS 11. I kind of feel like since iOS 10, it hasn't been, it just works. I would say it's, you get different bugs. I mean, think about it. It's been like tick tock, tick tock. iOS 11 addresses a bunch of stuff from iOS 10, but iOS 11 brought a whole bunch of new issues. So then iOS 12 solved those issues and introduced new issues. Apple is not immune to being a computer in the year 2020. This stuff is so complicated and so crazy, and they're trying to pack so much functionality into something that fits in your pocket. You can't make an It Just Works product. That does not exist. So we're going to have this. You know, iOS 14 has a bunch of issues, and iOS 14.1 is going to solve them, but it's going to bring up new issues. It's, a computer is always going to be a sliding, a moving target. It's just, we've got, you know, one of the most savvy marketing divisions on the planet creating a reality distortion field that encourages consumers to not consider the pros and cons of competing devices. And that's what marketing is. All right. Why don't we wrap up news? Because I've already gone on longer with news than I had intended to. I'm trying to keep the news block a little bit more pared down so we can spend more time talking about gadgets. But then I went and rambled, and it's almost into the first hour, and that's kind of silly. Matt Tyler, everyone wish Aditya Anil good luck on his exam. Aditya Anil is a lovely chap to converse with. He was on the Sam and Matt podcast. Really, really good dude. He's got an exam coming up, so everyone wish him luck, and hopefully he comes out of it relatively unscathed. Why don't we plug the subreddit real quick? I'm going to try and keep this in 4 minutes. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no different, but we've gotten a little bit more traction over this last week. Picked up like another 20 subscribers on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. My subreddit is not about me, though I show up on my subreddit. It's really about trying to build a real grassroots community to help share and promote content creators that we think deserve more attention. I've been just talking about the YouTube algorithm wrecking videos like mine for not following the rules of the algorithm, even though YouTube won't tell you what those rules are. If you want better content, you've got to be an engaged and active participant. Don't get me wrong. A passive view counts for our metrics, and that helps. But if you're not out there sharing, commenting, upvoting on services like Reddit, engaging with those creators, if you like this content, it goes away. We stop making it if we're not building and growing and satisfying some of these requirements and some of these metrics. And once YouTube starts giving me these reports, as soon as I log into my creator profile, these videos are underperforming, we're going to pull them so that people aren't watching them anymore. You know, like it's a popularity contest where if even our subscribers aren't engaged, it all gets roasted by this sort of unaccountable algorithm. So, and Gary the Fireman, 76 gift subs. I'm just very appreciative. You're doing awesome work, and I thank you tremendously from the bottom of my heart. All right, these are the top stories on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Number one for the week, coming by way of Team Vry, 806 subscribers. I really want you to think about this. When was the last time you went to YouTube and a content creator with less than 1,000 subscribers was put up as a viable option for you to watch one of their videos at the top of your list? This community, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, is broadening out and is holding tech conversations internationally to a better degree than YouTube's algorithm will support. YouTube, you will not discover content creators like this on YouTube. YouTube, as soon as you subscribe to Team Vry, I guarantee you they're going to try and put someone like Unbox Therapy under your nose. If you like tech conversations, why follow this guy with 800 subscribers when you could follow someone with 10 million? That's what YouTube is going to do. And if you want to have a more representative conversation around tech, a broader conversation around tech, maybe check out this Reddit this subreddit community, because I think you're going to find a lot cooler stuff. For example, the next two videos are from this awesome guy who wears these really cool hats. He's like the smartest guy on YouTube. I mean, pretty much the best tech commentator in our field. And, taking the number two spot with an Xperia 5 Mark II video and the number three spot with an Xperia 5 versus Xperia 1 Mark II video. I mean, I don't know that you could find a savvier dude who's like more handsome or more successful. He's like really with it and engaged. He's just all around pretty much the best guy. I mean, really, it's pretty good stuff. Those are my videos. That's why I'm being this tweaky about it. But then a new player who started submitting videos to the subreddit, Tech PhD, taken numerous spots after. I mean, the next three spots after my two videos. So I round out the top three. I have second place and third place for the week. Tech PhD taking fourth, fifth, and sixth with videos, should you buy the AirPods Pro in 2020, gaming mouse under $15, and best tech for students under $50. Tech PhD, he's a young kid. He's up and coming. He's building some stylish videos. He's putting together a channel. He has 550 subscribers. Following up, Mr. HTech, 465. Mitesh Shah with 4,600 subscribers. And then down, closing out the top 10, TK Bay, 146,000 subscribers looking at the Xperia 5 Mark II as a compact phone. We've got videos looking back at the TCL 10 Pro. We've got Jason, Painfully Honest Tech. We've got Chromecast TV, TK Bay taking a look at that. We've got Josh Vergara looking at the Xiaomi Mi 10T Pro. Digital Slang looking at the S20 FE. I mean, we've got some... and I almost missed LFA Reviews looking at the Soundpeats H1 versus, I don't know how if that's a word, F-I-I-L, Feel. T1 XS True Wireless. Again, if you love your ears, you should absolutely be subscribed to LFA Reviews. Just a ton of content to look at, to play with, audio, home consumer tech, smartphones, laptops, tablets, some style videos, vlogging videos, just some really, a massive rig for your Ronin if you want to improve your content creation. I say this every week, and every week it becomes even more true. If you want to see what's really being talked about across the technology landscape, YouTube ain't it. YouTube is going to alter your feed, manipulate your feed to try and keep you on their platform for as long as possible. But for people like me, that tends to burn me out on a topic. I don't enjoy that. I leave that topic. Aditya Anil is giving me a posture check. I'm going to crack my back. Ugh. That was more of a stretch, but I kind of needed it. So thank you for the posture check. YouTube is going to mess with your content. I get comments from people on the regular. Hey, man, I'm subscribed to your channel and I clicked the bell icon and I don't get notified. Or when they do, it's like they get notified a week later. YouTube ain't it. If you want to find new stuff, if you want to engage with content creators, if you want to share and help support and promote, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I hope you check it out. Every week we're growing and growing and growing. And I do want to say, when I started off the subreddit, I started it by using if this, then that, IFTTT, to auto-populate a bunch of videos so that there would be regular content coming to the subreddit. IFTTT is changing their rules, and I don't think I'm going to pay for the full package of IFTTT so that I can keep auto-sharing as many creators as I've been sharing in the past. If you'd like to build some karma on Reddit, get some of those tasty internet points, start looking at those creators that you see regularly shared and start sharing them yourself, and you'll build up more credibility and respectability on Reddit. So, one more plug, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I adore what this community is growing to become, and I hope you'll check it out, because every single one of these creators needs your support, from channels with 300,000 subscribers to channels with 500 subscribers. Tech commentary is more nuanced. There's more going on than what a top tent pole million plus subscriber channel is going to talk about. And that's what I think is more interesting than just the same spec reads from big channels with pretty B-roll. We want to dig a bit deeper than that. All right. Moving right along. Let me get this out of the way here. All right, Gadget Block. This was far and away the most requested story for me to talk about this week. Was a piece of audio gear. Counting through, I got a dozen people submitting the news coming out of Ultimate Ears. Let me get this out of the way here. There we go. This is the UE Fits True Wireless Earbuds. And I would play this video for you, but I'd probably end up getting a copyright ding or a strike or something. So I'm going to skip the video. But if you go to ultimateears.com, they are very excited about this new product. Real quick, just a bit of backstory. I am a huge fan of encouraging people to talk to their audiologist or to a professional grade audio manufacturer to improve the fit and seal of earbuds for your ears. You can play, I have a video that talks about different ear tips. You know, there's single flange, there's double flange, triple flange. There are different types of foam and some hybrid ear tips. But the big solution, the creme de la creme, is to get a custom mold done. So this is what my ear looks like. Like the up through the first bend of my ear canal, and then a little wing that helps lock the ear tip in place in my ear. This is the gold standard. And what's crazy is, in a world where we're normalizing expensive true wireless earbuds, you know, AirPods Pros, getting a pair of Pro monitors, these are in-ear monitors. They aren't just like, you know, little bullets or earbuds or sport buds, but getting my ears scanned, getting molds done, the impressions done, and having these custom tips delivered, not too far from the price of some AirPods Pro. And they are biologically designed to fit and stay in my ears as comfortably as possible. Now, obviously, not everyone can do that. Even just like for a lot of people, especially here in the United States, probably a little bit tricky just to see an audiologist in our current healthcare system. And people don't value ears in their sort of GP practice, you know, for your primary physician. So this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for a company with a decent rep in audio to shake things up. So the UE Fits. I like the look. It's like this little oval. It's not, you know how like AirPods, there's a stalk that sticks down below the ear that makes it look like you cut the cable off of some earbuds. This just looks a little bit more like an old school Bluetooth headset, but much, 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 much smaller. So a little oval that kind of sticks out from your ear. But this is what's interesting. They're calling this a light form technology. They've patented it. The ear tip is filled with a type of gel, and then you smush that ear tip into your ear. You get it real nice and snug. You can see it does seem to bend just past the first bend of your ear. So just like my custom molds, it might feel like it's going a bit deeper, but it's really going to fill the entire bowl of your ear from the outside into that first bend. Then these lights will activate the gel and cause it to harden, which makes it a semi-permanent fit. So it should better approximate what your ear is actually shaped like to give you a nice, comfortable, snug fit. This is, again, if it works as it's advertised, this should be one of the all-time, one of the better solutions for blocking noise in your environment through better passive and more comfortable passive noise reduction. Gary the fireman, my doctor looks in my ear and sees the wall. And just a regular loop of Pink Floyd going on whenever I visit my audiologist. So scrolling down, the entire process is only supposed to take about 60 seconds to mold and then freeze the shape in place. And then you've got custom fit. We can talk about all of these active noise canceling solutions. But the reality is, if you don't have a good, snug, comfortable fit that helps block the ear like an earplug, they don't work as well. From the Galaxy Beans to, what was it, the second generation Huawei FreeBuds, open ear earbuds, it's not the gig. And I haven't found any open ear earbud with active noise cancellation that can in any way approximate just putting an in-ear earbud in your skull. Just that. If you get tips that fit, that are comfortable, you've got the right size, you've got the right material, and you just in your ear canal, works so much better than trying to make some sort of sound altering technology for open ear. It's not it. Now, obviously, a lot of people don't like having something in the ear. I totally get that. But that's also why we have conversations about bone conduction, about setting safe volume limits. You don't just put an open ear earbud in front of your ear and go, oh, it's situational awareness. Because all you're going to do is turn that up louder than you really need to. So companies like this, I'm very excited. This makes me really happy that we're getting some options and some solutions and that they're sort of just on the face of it, core true wireless earbuds. They're saying 8 hours on a single charge, 20 hours with the included charge case. I love this, like, the diagram, the image of them before they've been molded. This is such an interesting approach to doing true wireless. So, I've been on Hearables. I don't have them out here on my desk right now, but I've got the new Hira. They're like a halfway point between true wireless earbuds and hearing aids for helping to improve speech recognition and reduce noise in your environment. I feel like we're right on the cusp of a consumer shift where more and more people will take their hearing seriously and shop better for protecting it. So UE Fit, definitely up my alley. I'm going to have to give these a try. I reached out to Ultimate Ears. I keep saying Urban Ears. I reached out to Ultimate Ears. This is probably why their PR won't get back to me. So I keep saying Urban Ears, and that's not the name of the company. I reached out to Ultimate Ears to see if I can get a review unit, but this is something I might actually buy just to feel if it really works. So we'll see if it goes. Tech Love and Mama, the Samsung Beans feel good in my ear, but I don't care for noise canceling since I need to hear my surroundings more often than not. I also don't listen to them at the max, but wanting noise canceling, this looks promising for my tiny baby ears. Absolutely accurate. But Tech Love and Mama, you know what I'm going to say. You're putting Samsung Beans in front of your ears. You need to set a volume limit. So listen quiet in like a perfectly quiet room. And then see if that's the volume limit that you can stand whenever there is noise in your environment. And I'll say it again, if you need situational awareness, bone conduction is better. Now, it's a little less good for audio fidelity, but your ears are totally open. And you really want to hear what's going on around you. That's how you really hear what's going on around you. I really don't like open ear earbuds for situational awareness because you've got a driver that's just shooting audio pressure into the ear canal and it's not blocking noise. So even if you say, well, I listen quiet, you probably still aren't listening as quiet as you would if there weren't any noise. And there's that tendency to, oh, maybe I'll just click it up an extra volume step or two. Oh, and that sounds a little bit better. Cool, 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 cool. Don't do that. Don't do that to your ears. It's a lobster pot. Your ear acclimates. It minimizes any discomfort. Then you turn it up again because your ears are going a little numb. Then you acclimate. Your ears go a little more numb and you turn it up again. So I think we can do better. That's a short story, incredibly long. I think we can do better than that. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Thanks, Juan Carlos, for allowing me to be part of your show. And I want to introduce myself to you guys. My name is TK Bay, and I've been doing YouTube for quite some time, almost 10 years now. And you can find me online by just looking for TK Bay, either on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. But the general consensus is I'm a tech reviewer. I provide an interesting way of approaching tech by the same way you would actually go ask your friend for help. That's generally the consensus of how my channel runs. I review anything from Android, iOS, PC computers, scooters, basically, you know, drones, anything that you think of as consumer tech. I generally try to get my hands on it and share with you guys my opinions. And of course, any troubleshooting or even tips and tricks that can help you enjoy your tech even better. Again, thank you very much to Juan Carlos. But if you'd like to check me out, just look for at TKDSL8655 on Instagram and Twitter, or TK Bay in YouTube.
Kyle Ruggles, bone conduction is great if you just want a soundtrack of your day, play a song and go along. Dave Burns following that up, it's so cool. And if you listen to podcasts while you run, it's more than adequate, especially when we had a dog. God, I would love taking him out on a really long walk, maybe hike some trails. I'd have a podcast going. You hear everything around you. It's really good. You'd listen to some music and the fidelity would not be as good. Obviously, your tissue conduction is not going to be the same as putting a good driver right in your ear. But I mean, it feels futuristic. It feels like magic. I cannot say enough nice things about bone conduction as a solution. If, again, this is the big if. I'm not saying bone conduction is right for everybody. I'm saying the big if you claim you need situational awareness and that is a primary purchasing motivator, then you are missing out by ignoring bone conduction. And you are getting a less good version of situational awareness by going with open ear earbuds. All right, that's enough prattling on about that. Goran says, I'm giving excellent advice, and Goran is absolutely correct. get this out of the way here. Well, because the other thing that's magical, so I mean, like Kyle Ruggles is saying bone conduction for phone calls, and you're like, yeah, that's great. You can hear what's going on around you. You can also put in earplugs. So you get the best of both worlds. Let's say you need to protect your hearing and it's too loud around you, but you don't want to have to switch to another headset. You get some 3M squishy foam, shove them in your ears, and bone conduction actually sounds better when you block your ears. That's how you know you've got real bone conduction and not just a speaker vibrating on your face, is if you block your ears are not competing for the audio signal anymore. Noise is not competing, and the audio signal radically improves. It's my favorite thing to do. I was even at the deli before we were doing all of this social distancing stuff. And like the guy at the deli sees like, hey man, what's going on with your headphones? And I was wearing my Aftershocks. So I said, yeah, they're open ear. They're bone conduction. Do you want to try them? And he puts them on and I'm playing Daft Punk. And he's like, okay, yeah, they sound all right. And he's like, but you can hear me talking and you can hear everything going on around you. He's like, yeah, I guess it's kind of cool. He's like, okay, plug your ears up. And he puts his fingers in his ear and it was like immediate. It was like a shock where all of a sudden, like the audio quality substantially improved. And we're not used to that. That is a very novel experience. So I probably sold a pair of Aftershocks that day.
And Kyle Ruggles is saying, yeah, you got to block your ears, spot on. It's, I've gone on long enough. Bone conduction is the gig. From a Corcoran 3, will LG ever release another neck speaker? I don't think so. Because you're talking about the Tone Studio. I love my Tone Studios still. Again, just another interesting or novel solution for having audio by your ears, but keeping your ears free for other activities. I think it was really expensive to manufacture, didn't get a ton of praise. I don't think it sold well. So I don't think LG is looking to, not only, I don't think LG is looking to bring that back. I think LG is going to start moving over to true wireless. I don't think, Aditya is saying I need to hydrate and I was already picking up my coffee mug. I think we're going to see LG start narrowing their neckband collection and focusing on earbuds, like true wireless earbuds. I kind of hope we get another generation of Tone neckbands, because I still think LG is the top pick for interacting with things like assistants. LG system of alert comes in, the headphones read off the alert for you. You reply to the alert with speech to text, and it's all seamless, and you never have to reference your phone. Is still, I still think it's the best version of that for true wireless earbuds, or not true wireless, for any wireless headphones. I haven't found anything that really does work as seamlessly as an LG neckband, but that interaction doesn't work on their new true wireless. So you can get the alert read to you, but you can't reply. And that drives me crazy. For as good as LG is with all of that extra tech, the communication side, I want that back. I really want that bad. I'm going to get this out of the way here. Okay. I already said we were moving on, and then I went and got sidetracked for another 5 minutes on headphones. I just wanted to bring this up quickly because I think this is a tough sell given what we know about the future of computing and where we might go with things like Apple Silicon and Windows on ARM. So from a design standpoint, I'm really glad to see it. I think it's pretty. I think it ticks a couple of good consumer boxes, but I'm a little anxious about the timing of Microsoft launching a Surface Laptop Go. This is the everyday, everywhere laptop. Was announced last week. We've got a product page, an order page for it. You can start configuring now, and it's shipping in the next 2 to 3 days. And it's a less expensive Surface. They're saying 13-hour battery life. It's less than 3 pounds. It runs on a 10th-gen Core i5 Intel mobile processor. It's supposed to have a better HD web camera. But it makes me a little anxious. How are we feeling about Surface Laptop Go? Let me go into the configuration so we can actually just look at the different models and the different specs and stuff. So what is it? You can get the Platinum. I like they call it Platinum. It's the gray one. It's the one that doesn't look as good. Because Sandstone and Ice Blue, you can only pre-order in the more expensive configurations. But Platinum is the one that's shipping. Pre-order is available right now. So $549 gets you a 10th-gen Core i5, 4 gigabytes of RAM, and 64 gigabytes of storage. I'm a Corcoran 3. 64 gigs seems low. So I very much believe Microsoft is looking at a strategy where at the lower consumer side, they're not fighting other laptop manufacturers. You know, sub $1,000, I have to believe Chromebooks and tablets like iPads, are probably the bigger threat for Windows as an ecosystem. So if your competitor is selling a not as nicely built Chromebook for $300, you sell a Surface laptop, and that's a name brand Microsoft product, for under $600, and it's going to be built nicer, and it's going to be built better, and it's probably going to have a better screen. And then all of the rest of these specs kind of line up, like 64 gigabits and the megapixels and the flippy doos. I need more jokey technology terms. It makes me a little anxious seeing 4 gigs of RAM and 64 gigs of storage on a Windows machine. I know that we're probably looking at students and trying to fight Chromebooks, and I would imagine that this is Microsoft again trying to focus on a more streamlined Windows app experience, not throwing out, like, you know, this is going to be your next gaming laptop. I don't think anyone's buying that. But Gary the Fireman, my Pixel 4 XL has better specs. And Warhead 324, Microsoft themselves, 8 gigabytes is recommended for Windows. So if we configure, I went back to the product page. If we configure the pre-orders for 8 gigabytes and 128 gigabytes of storage, take us up to $700, $699.99. So $150 price difference to double the RAM and double the storage, and then another $200 to double the storage again. Whoops, I didn't mean to click on that to move it through. So for 256 gigabytes of storage, we're at $900 for Core i5. I just feel, again, I'm not trying to talk people out of Surface. I've been an advocate for Surface Duo. I like what the Surface mission is trying to accomplish. But $900. We're getting so close to $1,000. $900. I have to believe we could probably pick up an Asus, a Dell, an HP, Lenovo. I have to believe that at around $900, we could probably climb our way into a Core i7. I mean, I'm not saying Core i9s, you know, that's going to be a $2,000 laptop with Intel 10th gen. It just makes me a little anxious that we're going to push Go as a low cost option. It's going to be focused on education. It's going to be focused on students. It's to fight Chromebooks and iPads. But $550 and our upgrade path is 8 gigabytes of RAM and 256 gigabytes of storage for $900. What are prices around the web for other devices? All right, you know what? Hold on one second. Let me pull up the regular Surface laptop, because I think that starts at $999, right? Not Surface laptop, Surface Pro 7, Surface Laptop 3. Let's just see what we can get on a Surface Laptop 3. So a Surface Laptop 3, 13-inch, 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of storage is currently on sale for $977. So at least they're pricing consistently. There's an overlap where I guess the Core i5 8 gig 128 is a better buy than the Surface Laptop 3 with 8 gig and 128 gigabytes of storage. But man, I mean, climbing up to a Core i7 with 16 gig of RAM and a terabyte of storage is $2,400 on a Surface. I guess I'm just a bit more married to the idea of Surface as a modular tablet than a more traditional laptop. Maybe that's where I'm running into this mental block. Like, Surface Duo just makes me so excited for this radical new form factor. Surface Pros, I've always loved this sort of mixed mobility. The Surface Book, having a detachable screen. Maybe that's my gig. Matt Tyler, get a 2019 flagship, a next stock, and you're spending less and getting more power. Yeah, probably, especially if you want a game or if you want to render video. I don't know that I'd do that on a Core i5 with 4 gigabytes of RAM. If all I had to do was log in to online classes, I guess that would work okay. But, you know, at that point, a cheap Chromebook can do something very, very similar. And Kyle Ruggles is saying an Acer Swift 5 is $655. From Dave Burns, is it a nice screen and keyboard, though? I'm sure that the display quality is very high, and I bet you that a Surface keyboard is going to feel really nice. But so does a Pixelbook. You know, again, climbing up to similar prices, similar power, similar configurations, like, the Pixelbook keyboard is great. My daughter's using my Pixelbook for school right now. It's again, I find that this is interesting positioning, and Microsoft absolutely needs to address this tier of the market, but I feel like this is a starter that will then be replaced by Windows on ARM. You come out with a Surface Laptop Go, and then maybe next year you can get an ARM-powered version, and it's going to be even cheaper. I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe this is an entry point to get people thinking about Surface products, the Surface tablet, the Surface Go tablet, the Surface Laptop Go, giving you a bit more flexibility there. But then those products get swapped out for Windows on ARM. And maybe that's the gig. Matt Tyler, we're all thinking it. Does it feel good on the lap? Yeah. Oh, and ER1980, the Surface Neo interests me more. That's what was kind of, again, it was just interesting. We got this new Surface Laptop Go, but we got kind of a tacit confirmation that the Neo is not near release. So it was removed from the Surface website. So there is no mention of the Surface Neo on the Surface website. And then there was a very terse communique from Microsoft saying it could be delayed until 2021, 2022. So unfortunately, if you want the Microsoft Courier experience, the big dual display to complement your little mini Surface Duo dual display, it's just on pause. The official Microsoft statement, they sent this to Neil Wynn. Earlier this year, we announced that we're pausing development for Surface Neo. We do not have any updates to share at this time. So unfortunately, that's probably not going to be on your list of things to grab right away. So apologies. I guess I just kind of broke that news for some of you. I thought that was more widely known. That's what I want to see Microsoft doing more of, though, are those kinds of alternative form factors and having dual display. I really hope that they're not putting it on pause just to try and do another folding screen, because I want the more durable, I want glass, I want stylus support, I want all the things that make a Surface. So it's it is what it is. From Nick Fell, if you don't want to buy a full flat Surface laptop, buy the Surface Pro 7. It's $600 to $700. They're good options, especially price performance. So I want to move into, I feel like, what was one of the biggest announcements of last week. And something that's been kind of chewed up and talked about. I was on a bunch of podcasts. I joined Easy Computer Solutions and Tana So Lit the day of the announcement. Just really fun conversations and an interesting play in a market where mobile gadget manufacturers are trying to improve the visibility of price performance. I feel like 2020 punched every manufacturer in the face who was relying on carrier leasing. So Samsung can come out and deliver a phone $1,300, But, you know, it's not really $1,300. I mean, you're only going to be paying like $45 a month. And isn't that a great deal for a zero interest loan? I think 2020 kind of wrecked a lot of that strategy. So at the beginning of the year, where a bunch of techies were panning phones like the V60. Oh, too many compromises, and I can't think of anything to do with dual display, and I just, you know, it's not good enough for the monies. They should have made it better and cheaper and better for the monies and worth it, and it just works. I feel like, oh, Matt Tyler saying, hydrate. I gotta hydrate. Hold on 1 second. Oh, yeah, I might need to raise the channel points on hydrate just to, I mean, again, the reminders are helpful, but I'm really going to have to pee at the end of this podcast. A little too much information there. So getting into the last bit of 2020, seeing the Galaxy S20 FE, I've seen some rumblings that carriers might be pulling the regular Galaxy S20 and only offering the FE, which could be kind of interesting from a market standpoint, but we're seeing a much savvier second half of 2020 for manufacturers focusing on sub $1,000 devices. Nick Fell has channel points to spend. Hold on, I'm going to take another drink of water. I mean, if Nick's going to burn those points, I don't want to negotiate future interactions with that. Maybe not spam the channel points consistently, but hold on. How off is my hat? No. We want to do this. There we go. Make it more of a, like a beret. That's what we're looking for, right? You know, someone telling me to adjust my hat. We'll rock the hat like this. Okay. He just wants to give me more time to hydrate. I channel points. I might need to add a channel point for let one go to the bathroom at the end of 2 hours. So, sorry, getting sidetracked like crazy. I am really foggy this podcast. I'm talking about Google and Pixels and stuff. I'm very much looking forward to a Pixel 5, a 5G phone, $699 full MSRP. What is it? That's $30 a month for financing. That's a solid option. And especially when you're pairing it with something like, I'm still a Google Fi subscriber. So again, $30 a month financing, it's attached to my Google Fi bill. Like that could be pretty good. I'm kind of curious to see where we're going to land in the tech conversation. Because right now I don't know that techies know what to do with Google. The Pixel 3a surprised a lot of big channels for selling as well as it did and for being as popular as it was, where the early conversation around Pixel 3a was, well, who would buy this? And it's cheap and it's plastic and it's not good enough. And then it proved to be a great phone. And so we were expecting Pixel 4a to also be a great phone. And I think it is. So Pixel 5, $700. So this is their top of the line phone, but we're not looking at the most expensive specs, right? We're using a mid-ranger processor. It's the 765. And I think that's going to be fine. It's the same processor that's in a Galaxy A71 or an LG Velvet. But the build materials are still going to be premium. They've got a really fancy trick in here where the main shell of the phone is going to be aluminum, kind of HTC style, but it's still going to support wireless charging and reverse wireless charging. It's got the sort of standard 12 megapixel image sensor that we've been using on Pixels for a while, in addition to an ultra wide instead of going with a telephoto lens. I don't know. I feel like a straightforward daily driver premium feeling phone. Oh, and I'm also just really excited to have rear fingerprint sensors back. In a world of potentially wearing masks, face unlock is not the gig. I really like having the rear fingerprint back. There's almost no bezel around the screen. I'm feeling like this is going to be one of those solid Google iPhone options, right? You go into a carrier store, maybe you're not the savviest consumer, and someone sees, well, what's a Pixel? What is that? What is that phone? And someone goes, oh, it's like Google's iPhone. And you go, oh, okay. Well, yeah, that sounds like I want the phone from Google, and Google makes the Android, so I should get the Android iPhone. I feel like we're in good territory, and it's not going to put too much of a hurt on someone's wallet to buy something a little nicer than just something, you know, kind of at the lower end of the mid-range. So this is kind of what I'm getting at. So Nick Fell says Pixel 5 makes no sense, in my opinion, because the Samsung FE exists, the V60 exists, and the OnePlus 8T is rumored to blow this out of the water all at the same price. So I feel like that is the point, though. The person who I would recommend get a V60 is different than the person who I would recommend get a Pixel 5. We have different feel, different feature set, different capabilities. I want more competition to better hone in on who's going to be the exact right fit for a gadget. I'm finally going hands-on with my first Samsung of the year on a Note. And I'm immediately thrust back into all of the things that I don't like about One UI. I don't really like what Samsung is doing with their software. It's not for me. And it's the same thing that I've been pointing out on my LG reviews and videos, is I kind of wish LG wasn't mimicking Samsung's One UI so much, because I don't like what they're doing by making menus bigger and everything takes up more space and bubbles are supposed to flow. And transitions aren't as smooth. When you've got these extra pretty animations and you're scrolling through your settings in your camera, it's stuttery. It launched at $1,300. The Note 20 has already been price reduced because people aren't buying it. That's not a good look. That's not a good look for your super premium, awesome, Mic expensive phone. Is I'm trying to do something basic in the camera by switching modes, and it's the animations are jaggy.
My phone never lags. Samsung is my BFF.
No, it lags. It stutters. My V60 doesn't. When I switch from photo to video, it goes snick. Like Wolverine's claws. When I do it on a Samsung, it's gzzzzk, like sandpaper. I don't like it. So anyway, I'm getting sidetracked here. If I don't like, so even with Samsung's better system of updates, if I don't like what Samsung's doing, then I need another option in there. And we're going to run into this with OnePlus too. OnePlus is not going to be the stock adjacent company anymore. I mean, look at the turn. Look at the UI changes for Android 11. If you want the streamlined Google approach to software, it's going to be a Pixel. That software matters. We keep devaluing, you know, crazy, awesome, radical new engineering and the work that goes into really good software UI. I love my OnePlus. The OnePlus 8 Pro is a phone that should not have been panned as hard as it was for being expensive. It earns its premium price tag. The OnePlus 8 Pro is a monster phone. And every time I pick it up, I know for a fact that multitasking and back button swipes will not be as organically smooth as my $350 Pixel 4a. That when I go to, when I'm in landscape and I swipe to either multitask or get go home from an app in landscape, it's going to be 2 to 3 swipes on a OnePlus 8 Pro. I'm going to nail it almost every single time on a Pixel 4a. Those little differences are things that we should be communicating to consumers. Because I'm not saying don't buy a OnePlus 8 Pro. I'm saying be aware of these issues. If that's something that might bother you, this might not be the phone for you, but there are other solutions that we can point to and other options that you might enjoy better. Camera processing is, it's not the same throwing Gcam on another phone. I know, that's always the catch-all. Why don't you do your camera reviews with Gcam? It's not a Pixel. That is not the Pixel experience. It's close, but it's not. Close, it's like horseshoes and hand grenades, right? If you want a Pixel, you get a Pixel. So, just because we've got reduced pricing on phones that launched at the first half of the year does not count out, in my opinion, the ability to buy a phone in the second half of the year. If you want an Xperia 5 Mark II, you need to buy an Xperia 5 Mark II. If you want Google's version of what an Android phone should resemble, then the Pixel is going to be $700 full MSRP. Now, what makes us think that in a month or two, there won't be a sale? Over the launch, what makes us think that there's not going to be a trade-in or there's not going to be a BOGO or anything else that makes this a little bit more palatable? And I'll still point to the Pixel 5 at $700. One of the things that we know makes the Pixel 5 more expensive is the fact that it includes millimeter wave technology. You buy the unlocked one and it's got listed support for Verizon. If you want to switch carriers and you don't want to have to swap your phone, you could go Pixel 5, start out with T-Mobile's 5G, and then go and switch over to Verizon's 5G. You know, again, that type of tech increases costs. And everyone's like, oh, I only want to buy unlocked phones. You're buying an unlocked phone and it probably won't support the new carrier issues in the United States. You're buying a 5G T-Mobile phone. You're not buying an unlocked phone. So, sorry, that was just a bit of rambling. The phone itself, I'm really excited about. I'm very much looking forward to see what Google can do to optimize the upper mid-range experience, right? Because we know this is mid-ranger hardware. The 765 isn't winning any of my performance showdowns. But the 730 in my Pixel 4a, because of Google's software hardware optimization, is often able to outperform the 765 in my Velvet, which runs a much heavier skin from LG. So I'm going to be really curious to see if a Pixel 5 with a 765 and Google really doing their best to polish up the software, if that will finally catch us up to the performance deficit we've seen with older premium chipsets like the Snapdragon 845. And that could be a fun race. Like, that could be a fun showdown, is to see, like, does Google really get us to that more premium feel, that higher tier of performance, that more fluid tier of performance? Because it's all software. It's software. I mean, that's really what gets us there. Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. From Nick Fell, Pixel is Android's iPhone is a fair point in that it's probably the closest Android we'd get to just works. The 4A 5G still seems like a better offering besides the more premium material and feel of the 5. I think it's all pros and cons. You know, again, there is... I keep bringing this up because I feel techies are the most negligent in considering in tech empathy, right? You happen to be savvier at tech. I need you to imagine what it would be like to not be as savvy at tech, because consumers are not listening to us, right? They stopped listening to us a while ago and they're playing the brand game, right? So there is someone walking into a carrier store right now who's going to pay full price for an iPhone 11 Pro. That's the phone. They need to buy a phone. They're at the carrier store. They buy iPhones. They want an iPhone. They're going to buy an iPhone. And that's what they're going to walk out the door with. $40 a month for 24 months, full retail. They're going to buy the phone that's about to be replaced next week. That's what we need to be considering. There's a 4A 5G, and someone's going to walk into a carrier store, and they're going to pick it up, and they're going to feel that the back is plastic. They're going to see that it's got a little bit more of a chin bezel, and then right next to it's going to be a Pixel 5. And if they make the choice for the more premium build materials, if they see that it's got like this wireless charging thing, that could be kind of interesting. I've been hearing nice things about that. And they both support the 5G. Well, you know what? Maybe I should get the better phone now, and it's going to be a little bit more future-proofed for accessories and for feeling a little bit nicer. And maybe it's going to be a bit more durable. Regardless of whether or not that stuff is true, I don't think the person picking up the Pixel 5 is getting ripped off. I don't. I really don't. I think the experience is more than the chipset. And for the person who values different build materials, I really want more phones to be not made out of glass. I'm very excited to hold a phone that's made out of metal. I really want to feel that again. It's the HTC 10. Is that the last one? The HTC 10 and the LG V20. And we haven't had serious options in this space since then. That's silly. I want other phones to be built. So to acknowledge that and to say, like, you know, you could take it from, you can use millimeter wave on Verizon. It's probably the best version of an unlocked phone this year, if you care about carrier stuff, and that it's a unique feel and a unique build. That to me matters. And that you can get that with what I'm sure is going to be an extremely fluid experience after using the Pixel 4a, have cameras that are still competitive against top tier fare for most consumer interactions and point and shoot photography, and at full MSRP before there are any sales, it's going to be $700. I think we're in good territory. I do not have a problem philosophically or in retail with that as a solution. Matt Tyler, I want to feel that metal in my hand with a case on. Oh, you jerk. Again, I'm torn. Like, if I'm going to put a case on the Pixel 5, I still don't have a case on my Pixel 4. My Pixel 4a, I should say. I have a case on my Pixel 4 XL because it's glass and glass breaks. Hold on, I've got one more mug of water here. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to try not to bump my mic. All right, we're going into mug 3. I love it. Voice is barely hanging on. We can do this. We can stick the landing. So, sorry. There was a bunch of stuff announced. I'm obviously focusing in on the phone, but it's because I'm so anxious. I'm so curious to see what it is that we can do to improve this sort of mid-ranger phone experience. Excuse me. Like I said, I'm anxious. Now, obviously there were some announcements to Stadia getting some more support, and then Nest. Oh, come on. Nest Audio was the big reveal a directional speaker. I was very surprised to see that this is directional, where it's got a little tweeter and a larger woofer unit that are supposed to be pointed in a specific direction, but fabric covered, keeping up that aesthetic from Google with a sort of a more organic look for a gadget. It shouldn't stand out too aggressively as being techie or geeky. But yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting. Saying it's 75% louder than the original Google Home and has 50% stronger bass. But instead of going with a vertically mounted speaker unit that's more 360 degree, I kind of like this trend of moving back towards more traditional monitor style speakers. You point them in the direction where you want them, and I think you'll arrive at slightly better audio fidelity for the directionality. But what I haven't seen is whether or not they're easy to link as like a stereo pair. Oh, where there we go. Twice as mesmerizing. Just pair two Nest Audio speakers. It's right here and here. They didn't mention it during the live stream, the announcement, but it's here on their website. So that answers my question. It's great. Pair two Nest Audio speakers together for stereo sound. Yeah, there you go. Asked and answered. Good job, Google. It's like you're listening to me even when I don't activate my assistant. privacy built in. So I just make a jab about privacy, and literally the next thing I scroll onto is that Nest Audio is designed to protect your privacy. You can delete your history by saying keyword, action word, delete what I just said. To physically turn off the microphone, slide the mic switch on the back to show orange. So you can also mute the microphones. That's just, okay, sorry. It was just a cute little bits of synergy between my inane ramblings and the Google website. So some interesting stuff. The last thing is I've been poking around and playing with Stadia again. It's been working really well. I'm even using it on some crazy low power hardware, like just through something with a basic web browser. It's interesting. The Stadia controller, isn't it coming in like a new color? Wasn't that the announcement that they made? Yeah, here I can screen share this. So they're getting more of those pixel colors where if you want the Just Black or the Wasabi, it's a new sort of mint green, I guess you'd call it. And it looks pretty cool. But I'm hoping that this is a trend. I'm hoping that this is indicative of where we might go with future Google announcements and Google products. I think we all can fairly say Google has a problem with shotgunning a ton of different features and apps and services, seeing what might be a little bit more popular, and then if nothing really sticks, killing a bunch of platforms and programs. The fact that I'm buddies with the Killed by Google Twitter account and have shared some hilarious tweets at Google's expense kind of speaks to a company culture that really needs to examine how teams internally focus on projects and iterate to improve services. So, you know, Stadia comes out and it's an amazing proof of concept. Stadia really solidified the tech and made it viable to offer up game streaming as a solution. Google servers, playing games, you log in through a browser and it works. But they had a clumsy launch for actually making it a consumer-facing service, building up a catalog of games that you can jump into, making it more accessible, and helping consumers understand what makes it a little bit different. At the same time that Microsoft was radically iterating on Game Pass as a catalog. And now Game Pass Ultimate includes the ability to stream a certain portion of your catalog over a very similar Stadia-style interaction. So I feel like it's totally fair for a lot of us who are a bit Google gun-shy to think like, well, maybe this is just going to get slow-played and they're eventually just going to pull the plug on it. But during the Pixel 5 announcement, getting some word that they're going to be beefing up the catalog, that they're working on improvements, that they're introducing this new Stadia controller. It's $70, which is a pretty good price for, I think, what would be a high-quality controller. I'm at least encouraged by a Google that's showing and talking about it. It's not just like, hey, they kind of quietly improved the catalog in a blog post. They made it a part of the keynote, which was only a 30-minute live stream. This is like one of the most efficient product reveals I've ever seen in my entire gadget reviewing existence. Oh, Nam saying I gotta hydrate, and I absolutely do. And Matt Tyler redeemed Breathe. Great. So hopefully this is the way forward. I would love to see a Google that iterates and refines. You know, we're going to lose Google Play Music. We're getting YouTube Music. Seeing them iterate and improve YouTube Music to make it the service that I liked from Google Play Music would be refreshing. Seeing them continue to iterate and improve on Stadia, I think is going to be critical. Oh, because that was one of the other stories. So I didn't include the links for it because I didn't think I was really going to talk about it. But this kind of goes hand in hand. You know, Google is looking at really enforcing its 30% monetization cut of in-app purchases, right? We just got news like this morning that they're going to be delaying that in India, I think through next year, to get developers used to how the monetization in Google Play is going to work. But at the same time, we've also seen indications that they're going to make it easier to allow for competing app stores. So let's say you want a list of high quality Android games through Epic Games or through Steam, through Humble Bundle. Humble Bundle has a catalog app that you install. And then if you've ever bought Android apps through Humble Bundle, they'll update the apps just like the Google Play Store. It's kind of funny. The Amazon App Store, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like that's probably the better way to get around their current antitrust investigations. You buy anything through Google Play, Google gets a 30% cut. That's the breaks. But you want to install another app store on your phone, you're more than welcome to do business with other companies in other ways. And that to me is the better way forward. You want Game Pass on your phone? Well, you're doing business directly with Microsoft. And you have a catalog app from Microsoft. You are paying Microsoft. And there's no, there's nothing on Google servers to force Microsoft to give Google a 30% cut of transactions or to make the App Store more complicated to include all of the Game Pass games. Apple's solution is antiquated by comparison. So that to me is a step in the right direction, better for competition. Android's always been more open anyway. So those of us who care about how we do business with other companies, we're good. We understand this relationship already. If Google can start improving their services with more regular updates, feature drops, whatever they're going to call them, that's a Google that I'm much more interested in, that I'm a lot more excited to talk about. Because it feels like for the last couple of years, we've been in this sort of services death spiral. What are they going to cut this week? How are they going to mess up messaging this time? What are they going to do to my Chromecast tomorrow? How are they going to jack up YouTube TV prices? I want a Google that's refining, and this Stadia announcement gave me that little spark of hope that that might be what we're getting. Sorry, just lots of, I mentioned Google Play Music and YouTube Music and got a lot of comments about that. But yeah, it's some funny stuff. So yes, I'm going to be going hands-on with, you know, let's wrap up this podcast just talking about what's on the docket. I've shot the video for LG Velvet. So we're going to be doing, international Snapdragon 765 Velvet versus MediaTek Dimensity T-Mobile Velvet. So the two different flavors of Velvet. I've got a video shot for the TicWatch 3. So this is, I think, one of the best. I think this is the best option for Wear OS. That's not the highest bar, but I've always really enjoyed TicWatches. I've got the last gen TicWatch and then the less expensive TicWatch C right behind that over on the table. So I'm now through my third recharge. So that's 9 days of use and only three recharges. And I've been tracking workouts. It's not like it's 3 days of not using it, but 3 days of really using it, notifications, heart rate, blood oxygen monitoring. It's a monster performer. It's got great fitness applications, and then it's just a little bit more powerful. So it's been better for interactions, like when I'm swiping through notifications and stuff. So I've been really, really happy with TicWatch. I really feel like they're the driving force in Wear OS, not Fossil Group. The Fossil Group, they're fine. They're good options, but I think Mobvoi is probably more cutting edge for really getting the stuff into consumers' hands. I had a whole list of things. The Showdown video, so be on the lookout this afternoon for TK and I to be talking about Showdown videos. I've got the script written for my, for which one? I've got a camera review. I've got a major camera review coming out, and now I'm brain locking on the phone. But one of the things that just came in. Oh, and I am going to be going hands-on. I really want to spend time with a Verizon LG Wing and the Pixel 5. Those are definitely going to be some of my closer phones for the year. But this bad boy came in over the weekend. If you see this, it says Nex on it, because it's a Nex dock. But it's not just any Nex dock. It's the new Nex dock that has a bigger screen to bezel ratio, a better screen to bezel ratio, and it's a touch screen. So when you connect, you know, touch enabled devices or Windows computers to the Nex dock, you end up with a touch powered laptop, and it's real pretty. It's nicely kind of cleaned up and refined over the last generation Nex dock. Again, like the bezels on the screen, everything's a little bit cleaner, a little bit nicer. The speakers point in a better direction, so it's a little easier to hear as those speakers bounce off the table. I've only had it for a full day, but I'm already using this because I'm going to be reviewing like some of these like mini PCs. So this is the Azul. This is like a little mini PC in a stick kind of a product that just hit me. The HDMI just popped me in the face there. But these are the products that I think are really going to help us move mobility forward. It's boutique. Their next round of pre-orders for the Nex Dock Touch, I don't think they're going to be shipping out this year. I think they're going to be shipping out the beginning of 2021. So if you want one of these, you got to get in line. This kind of stuff makes me really excited. Being able to plug a phone into this, being able to plug a desktop PC. So like when I was gutting that Nook, I've got a Core i9 Nook. When I was rebuilding it, just to make sure everything was running, I didn't connect it to computer monitors or to my TV. I connected it to a Nex dock. So I had a keyboard and a touchpad and a display all in one, so I could troubleshoot anything that was going on with my Nook build. These things are huge for PC building. It is so helpful. If I've got a PC gutted on my desk, I don't want to have a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse and cables and everything all over the place. I just plug in this and it just works. So we've got phone challenges coming up. We've got a cross-channel collaboration going on with TK Bay. We've got some audio gear to talk about. We've got a ton of phones that I'm still wrapping up coverage on. We've got audio reviews coming for Sony. The Xperia is the phone. I'm going to do a joint camera review for the Xperia 1 and the Xperia 5. And late last night, which is why I'm so foggy, I finished the script for the Xperia camera review. That's going to be a huge video for everything that's going on. I need to take another drink of water here because we're going to close out this podcast and I am proper foggy. This is getting silly. From Bazikos, how does the next doc compare to the competition? Oh, wait. It's so frustrating. So, okay. I I've got the note and I plug the note into my PC and it fires up. Would you like to use Dex? I'm like, no. No, I don't. I have this giant workstation. I don't want to power another computer UI from my phone on this workstation. Dex, that doesn't really help me as much as you might think it could. But if Samsung could give me, because Samsung's laptop design and engineering is solid, if Samsung could give me a Dex dock, right? So I've got a Nex dock, but if I could get a proper built Samsung Dex dock, that would be awesome. That would easily take my smartphone computing portability laptop replacement game to the next level. $1,000 phone, a couple hundred dollars on a dock. That Nex dock touch, $269 for a nice keyboard, a nice, it's not the best trackpad, but it's a good functional trackpad, a 1080p touch screen, and a giant battery to charge your phone up and power the unit. And every time you upgrade your phone or plug it into another computer, you basically get a laptop upgrade. It's such a good idea, and I really wish anyone else were actually delivering to compete. But right now, I mean, it's like I can't say enough nice things about Bone Conduction. I can't say enough nice things about the Nex dock. It really does help you drive this stuff to a higher degree. And even if your phone doesn't have a desktop mode, the script that I wrote on the Xperia 1 Mark II. So I just split screen and I had a video playing in YouTube and I had Microsoft Word on the other split screen and it was on the Nex dock and it was great. It was a lovely writing experience while still streaming some video. Like, split screening, you can alt tab just like you can on a PC. I'll have a full video out on it and you'll hear me ramble on. You don't need me to do that all here. So we have crazy power in our pockets. A whole new generation of 5G devices are finally hitting more competitive prices. Competition is looking so much stronger for consumers. And I've got way too many videos to make. I'm going to be editing like crazy. So be on the lookout for some fun stuff. I think that's probably the right note to go out on. Is there any Kyle Ruggles saying Bone Conduction for the win? DTNL. Well, you see, Apple solved that problem. They have an iPad, a MacBook, and an iPhone. None of that multi-purpose portability stuff. You need all three devices. Why have fewer computer when more computer just as good? Kyle Ruggles, like, how hard is it to have desktop mode on an Android phone when Chromebooks are basically running Android that can run Android apps? LOL. It's been driving me nuts. I'm so excited when LG can polish up that backbone of a desktop service, but it still needs some work. And then Dex, I mean, it's so good. I really want to be so much happier about what Samsung is doing, but then just these little quirky things get in the way where it's like, I don't feel they deserve to be the de facto Android option for consumers when little things like, we've got this amazing software. Do you? Because your camera UI isn't great. Yes, but you can also use your phone as a computer. Can you? Because right now, the main application seems to be taking my phone and plugging it into another computer so I can use my phone as a computer. Do you have some way for me to, like, plug a phone into, like, a laptop shell and just use it that way? No, we'd never do that. We're Samsung. Drives me nuts. Drives me nuts. Trey 916. I can thank Juan for these aftershocks I won on his last ever Patreon contest before he got slapped around for them. Yeah, that was also on me. I should have figured out contests on paywall sites, probably not a great idea. But I'm glad you enjoy the Aftershocks, because that was a fun giveaway. All right, folks, let's put a pin in it. Let's wrap this up. I want to say thank you for following me on this very rambly and stuttery edition of the Monday Morning Tech Strat Show. I like having these channel points. I just thought no one wanted to use channel points. I really thought that I had set these up so that people could, but now I'm glad that that they're for real, and we're going to have to play around with some other options for channel points. Give me some suggestions. You know, hit me up on Twitter or send me an email or some other communique that isn't instantly lost in a live chat. What other channel points rewards would you want to try out? I am very partial to ASMR and putting like a ridiculous huge number of points, like 10,000 points, and I'll do another ASMR sip like this. But for serious, like what else we can do to kind of shake this up, because they're fun. We'll want to be careful not to spam them too hard, but I think they're fun. But yes, tons of stuff coming to the channels, all of the news, all of the links, everything that we talked about on this podcast, you can hit on somegadgetguy.com. A fun pair of videos coming out this afternoon. Make sure you're subscribed to TK Bay's channel. And then also just the number of people in here that are supporting and spreading the word. That is greatly appreciated. Seeing this arms race for subscriptions is awesome. I can't thank you all enough, but then also hitting the Patreon.com/somegadgetguy. I'm going to have a post for the Patreon, sometime this week to start setting the calendar for our first game night. It can't be this coming weekend, 'cause that's my wife's birthday, but the next weekend, I'm thinking a Saturday night game night for the Patreon. I'll have dates, times. We can try and work out some scheduling stuff, but I'm thinking we're going to start with Battlelands Royale and then see where that takes us, see how far we want to go with having a community gameplay night where we can all just kind of blow each other up and have a good time doing it. So, folks, the rest of this is pretty well known, but you know, you can catch me around the internet, some gadget guy on the Twitters, here on the Twitch, on the YouTubes, on the Facebooks, on the Instagrams. But the support, while greatly appreciated, we need to spread the word. We need to get more of that community on glowing rectangles. Make sure that we're hooking people up with good content and supporting content creators of all shapes and sorts and sizes. You know, it doesn't matter what channel right now, everyone's kind of going through a bit of a YouTube crisis, and it's on us. It's on us to support the content that we want to see. You want more of it? You got to be an advocate for it. You can't just let the automatic algorithm do all the lifting for you. So I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And the world is still ludicrously crazy. So stay safe, be well. I want to see all these names back here next week. Take care of yourselves. It's wacky. So let's not let that get us too messed up in the wackiness. We'll catch you back here next week. I love y'all. Take care.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.